This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 68 of What's It Like. My guest is Jennifer Carrasco, somewhere in my stomping grounds of Seattle.
That's right. That's right. I'm in West Seattle. It's sort of a peninsula that sticks out on the west side of Seattle. We can actually take a small ferry from Alki Bay right over to downtown Seattle. It's a great place.
I love Alki. It's one of my favorite spots. Oh. I grew up in White Center and West Seattle, more to the Fauntleroy Ferry than the Alki part. But
yeah,
I know the area well.
Oh, good.
Did you grow up in that area?
No, I grew up in an area in Washington called the Palouse, which is 30 miles from Lewiston and 60 miles from Walla Walla. It's a wheat farming area.
Yeah, where the Appaloosa horses come from.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And there's the Nez Perce Reservation just outside of Lewiston. So Lewis and Clark passed through our area, as a matter of fact.
Not recently.
No.
Did you come from a large family?
I have 21 first cousins.
Oh, my goodness.
Irish Catholic, what can I say?
Can you name them all?
Yeah, I can.
Really?
They're really
wow.
Nice people. I like them.
Yeah, but I like my cousins too, but I can't name them all. So with so many relatives, when you were growing up, who had the biggest influence on your life?
Probably, they all did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my dad and my mother were very supportive of my art, as were my grandparents. I lived a block away from my grandparents, and I stayed with them a lot. And I was the oldest grandchild, so I kind of got the best of everything.
What was your major challenge as a child?
I was shy and introspective, and it bothered me. You know, I was shy around people. But I look back on it now, and my involvement in nature in the area. I fished a lot in the creek that ran through the back of our house, and went hiking with my dad and my grandfather, spent a lot of time outdoors. And I think that helped me as an artist, helped me adjust to being alone, which you have to do to think and work as an artist. And I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I search it out now.
Did you always want to be an artist?
Yes, ever since I was about 6 or 7.
Hmm.
And I knew that was my path. My parents realized it when I was about 8, and I did a drawing of the infant Jesus of Prague. I had a little statue on my dresser, and I showed it to my mother, and I can really remember her looking at my dad and saying, "Pat, this girl has talent." And so for Christmas, my dad made me a small easel and gave me my Uncle Bert's old drawing board. And we went down. You realize that I'm from a very small town. There's about 1,000 people in our little town, mostly farmers. And he took me down to the local newspaper, and it was still one of these wonderful clacking and smelling of ink and wonderful printing presses thing. And the owner was named Red Bunch, and my dad said, "Red, we'd like to buy a ream of newsprint." And so I drew on newsprint, and it was a good idea because they gave me pastels for Christmas, and I worked large, which was a good thing for a kid. And I loved horses, so I do horses, and I'd take one out, show it to my mother. She was working in the kitchen, and she'd say, "Oh, wonderful." And I'd go back and do another. And it's never stopped.
So how did you become an artist?
Let's see. Well, until I was about 30, I kept giving away my stuff. You know, I was kind of a whiz kid in drawing in that small high school, although I didn't have an art teacher. And so I would just give it away. It was easy for me. And basically, it was rather facile. It was rather shallow. You know, I could draw quickly and do it. Then I went to school and college, and then I majored in art. And my dad insisted on education as well, which I was glad of. It was a good practical move. And I kept on doing art, but I was teaching. Mm-hmm. And I joined Peace Corps. I went overseas and did a lot of personal drawing while I was there, but I taught English as a second language.
Mm, where did you go?
Philippines.
Oh.
And when I got out of Peace Corps, I went to Manila and was a hippie in Manila for about 6 years. And I also taught at a small Department of Defense school, which at that time was in Manila. And I was married. I married a Filipino guy. Then I got transferred to Taiwan, and Rick and I and my small little boy went there, and I've always taken lessons. And when I came back to the Philippines, I started working at Clark Air Force Base, which is now covered by volcanic ash, an awful lot of it. And I realized at the time that if I wanted to be an artist, I better get myself in gear. And so fortunately, through Rick, I had many, and my experience in Manila, I had many contacts there. And I did about 12 one-woman exhibits in Manila, and that got me started as a serious artist in selling my work.
Did you have a theme for your art project?
Yeah, it was mostly the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was one time I did a whole series of drawings of the saints, because every prominent family in the Philippines would have a life-size saint in a glass cage in their living room or sala. And so I found that really interesting. So mm-hmm. I did a lot of drawings of women in glass cages. And of course, you know, I was reading feminist literature at the time, and so it kind of tied in. Also, I was doing, I did a series on shells, because, of course, we were so close to the ocean and spent a lot of time on the beaches. So I guess nature and my environment.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite media?
Watercolor and acrylics. Watercolor was good when we were traveling a lot, because it didn't gas my family and it was easy to carry around. And acrylics were more studio work, you know, things that I would derive from my watercolor. Also, I've kept a journal, drawing journal, for about 36 years now, and at least one journal for every year. So those have been a great source of images and helped me find out where I was going. And I've always been torn between writing and painting. But, you know, I can make a better living from painting than writing poetry. So the poetry is a sideline.
So you're an artist, but what exactly do you do?
I do murals for a living. But my largest project was a 40 by 30 foot ballroom.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the walls were 17 feet high. And it took me 2 years to do that. But I do large work. And it's interesting because before I'd done that ballroom, I'd never done anything larger than 5 feet by 9 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Peace Corps taught me a very good lesson. It, you know, people would ask me if I'd do something. I kind of crossed my fingers behind my back and I'd say, sure. And if you do enough research and you plan properly, you don't fall on your face very often. And if you do fall on your face, there's worse things than failing. The worst thing, I think, would be not to try it.
So if you do a mural on a wall and the company or whatever sells the building, do they tear down the wall or what happens?
Oh, well, I've got that figured out. I do my stuff on canvas, and it's applied to the wall like wallpaper.
Huh?
And with 8 pounds of pressure, you can pull it off without damaging the mural and bring it to another site or roll it up and store it for, you know, the next time you move your tent.
Wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and because think of all the wonderful WPA paintings that were painted over in post offices and things, and people are spending a lot of money to restore them. They're
mm-hmm.
finding them. And this way, you know, Americans are so mobile that it's a good selling point. And, you know, I've had two murals that have been in 7 different houses. So, you know, the people just bring them along with them. And I did a lot of murals a few years ago for Tommy Bahama, a retail store. And I've got one in Maui and one in Dubai and all over the United States. But I just roll them up. I roll them up like a rug and put them in a sauna tube, and they ship out great. You always find a way. My friend, who's a glass artist, said that you design it first and then figure out how to do it. And I think that's a really good rule.
Mm-hmm. What's the best thing about your job?
My freedom. You know, I can say, yes, I'll do it, or I can say no. I can tell my client, well, it's going to take me this amount of time, and that works. The worst part about it is it's probably not, well, it's just not as stable as, say, working for a corporation. But as I told my mother, when she was worried about the stability of my job, I said I could be working for Citibank and on the street now. You know, people, you know, get fired or downsized. So when I first came out here, I actually didn't start my mural business until I was 50. And when I first came out here, I just went around to designers with my portfolio and just kept plugging at it. It's a combination of not giving up and actually, I think there are a lot of people out there that have more talent than I do. There always are, you know, but I'm very stubborn. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
If you don't give up.
When you're 3 years old, it's called being stubborn. When
yeah.
you're older, we call it stick-to-itiveness.
Maybe. Yeah. I think so.
What has surprised you about your job?
I don't know if anything surprises me so much as the pleasure I take out of it. And that doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's I tend to be sort of bookish. So the challenge of researching as well as the challenge of painting is really fun. Like for that ballroom job, the theme was the Great Pacific Northwest. And I have, my field guides are just crusted with paint, you know. Even the spider field guide, you know, and the mushroom field guide. I've learned so much with each piece or with each project. I just got back from working in the Toulouse, the eastern side of the state, my hometown. And this time it was painting and repairing the statues of the saints in the little church that my great-grandparents helped build. And that was really fun. I have two sisters that are living there, so I got to hang out with them. And just working with the community, it was like when I lived in Georgia for about 8 years, the state of Georgia, and I did residencies with the Arts Council in Georgia and also in South Carolina. So I got to travel around and work in schools. And this was like doing the same thing, because I went into the schools, and then I worked with the art group there, and I also worked with the church. And it was like my residencies in Georgia. It was really fun, but it was my own hometown.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Somebody who really enjoys working with people. Somebody who doesn't get upset with suggestions from other people. Somebody who likes to do research, who is very self-motivated. Somebody who is very determined to stick it out until it's finished. Somebody who's a problem solver, because there's always interesting things you have to deal with and problem solve. For instance, that ballroom, I ended up being project manager as well as painter. And I had to find people who could do the carpentry work, people who could go do the gold leaf. I had to have a crew of people who could do the finishes that I do the drawing and images on. I had to locate wallpaper hangers. And I had to figure out, with the help of the carpenters and the tradespeople, how to safely install the artwork so that it wouldn't warp or buckle or become damaged by moisture because the walls were concrete. And somebody who's physically strong. I'm not very wide, but I'm agile. And at the end, I fell off a scaffold. Mm. And, you know, I had, a couple of years ago, I had to get a new hip because of that. But you can't be weak physically because you're always slipping things around. And I think it's important to know how to ask for help when you don't have any idea. So you have to have friends that are in the field. And that was really helpful for me. I've so many of the things I've learned, it's because I have friends in the field or tradesmen in the field. I'll ask wallpaper hangers. They've got great ideas. Painters, wonderful ideas. So that's, you know, not much of a nutshell there, but that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. So if someone wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
Okay. you'd have to probably in the beginning do a bunch of pro bono work because you've got to build up a portfolio that shows you have the chops. So that means that you need a fallback job to keep body and soul together while you're developing your art. I have found that what helps me is I can do figures and figurative art pretty well, and I draw well, and a lot of people coming up in the art world now don't draw very much, and I've found that is really helpful, and it, you know, it sharpens your observational skills. And so my sketchbook has really helped me. The discipline of carefully observing things and drawing them has really helped. Just develop a portfolio that way and take on jobs and don't give yourself any slack. That's really important. And if you take on a job and it's more than you bargained for, don't whine. Go for it. And develop some business skills, because as you start becoming in demand, then you can start asking for more money and developing good contracts and giving yourself, you know, credit for what you've accomplished and what you can do.
How do you decide what to charge?
I've kind of got a formula. I have listings of stuff that I have to check off. I do labor and materials times two and then add a 20%. That's kind of standard for retail stuff.
Mm.
You know, if the job is really complicated and very detailed, I'll warn my client. When I write out a contract, I really am very detailed in the description. First of all, I'll do a detailed drawing, and I'll show the client and let them do suggestions on that. And then I'll do a color rendering, very detailed, to scale. And with retail stores like Tommy Bahama, I would do this, and I do it to scale with a graph over it, so that when I put my canvas up on the board, the graph, I could scale up from the graph. Because these retail stores don't like surprises. They want to get what they see in their initial rendering that they've written off on. And it's really saved me a lot of trouble to do this up front. Those are a couple of things. I have a good accountant. I deduct everything short of breathing for my... And, you know, my accountant said that be very honest about your income and try your best to claim as much as you can on your deductions for a small business. And if, you know, the IRS doesn't agree with it, they can let you know, and, you know, it's no big deal. I pay my taxes like anyone else. And you better be darn sure about it, because I was audited twice. And the last time I was audited, it was by the state. And the guy was really nice. He was down in my basement in my office for 3 days going through my stuff. And, you know, I was fine. And I said, Aaron, why bother with me? I'm small potatoes. And he said, well, you know, we're having such trouble with the large corporations. They go to court, and they have lawyers, and we never get money out of them. So we're going after the small businesses. So, you know, I always bear that in mind. So those things are really important. prepare for your project, make sure your ducks are in a row with your accounting, and don't be afraid to ask for what you're worth.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
You know, I like to start in the afternoon, and my partner Phil is a very understanding man, and I'll come in and fix dinner, and then I'll go out and work unbothered by people dropping in or, you know, business type things. I'll work often until 2 or 3 in the morning. A couple of mornings ago, I worked until 5 in the morning. And I'll come in and, you know, sack out and sleep until 11 and get up and do it again. And I can do that because I'm older. I don't have kids. And, you know, as I said, my partner is fine with it. So that's a luxury I have now. When I was younger and I had a family to raise, it was more challenging. And it can be quite challenging with a growing family and a lot of other obligations. It's not an easy life for a person that wants to be normal, whatever that is.
So, Jennifer, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally.
Yeah.
How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
It's very funny. I have a real addiction to listening to books on tape or listening to audio books. And so I try to get up a really good stack of books, which I check out from the library. And now I have an iTouch, which I adore. And I can check out free books from the library. And if I know that I want to finish a fabulous story, that kind of motivates me to get out there and get going. Also, you know, I have always met my deadlines, and that's another thing, being raised. I'm a very retired Catholic now, but being raised Catholic, I always had the guilt that I had to finish my homework, right? And so I pride myself on meeting my deadlines. And that's something I noticed when I went back to school, because I went back to school when I was 50 to get some design experience, because fine arts is really different from design. And also I needed to learn how to use computers. And when I started, I had no idea. I mean, I couldn't even turn it on. And now I'm doing okay, you know. I can manage simple Photoshop, and I have a Mac, and I have a little laptop, and, you know, I can use my iTouch. So that really helped me, you know, get started.
So let me turn the question around for you. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
I have a beer. Simple as that. I come in sometimes at night so hyper from working. And, you know, I'll have a beer and then I'll go to sleep. I don't know how good it is for my waistline. But at this point in my life, I don't care. Yeah.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Yeah. Some personal events. You know, when I got divorced and I had no money, coming out here was a shot in the dark. Although I have family out here and they're very supportive, but still I was staying in girlfriends' basements for a couple of years and not making hardly any money at all. I think that big ballroom job was amazing. You know, it took me 2 years to do that. And that was kind of a high point in my life.
Is there an idea or a principle that helps you through these challenges?
Just putting my head down and pushing through it, I think. I come from pioneer stock, and, you know, spending a lot of time with my dad and my grandfather out in nature, they always said, well, you can come, but if you whine, you can't. It's a good carryover, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was never allowed to manipulate, you know, my way out of it just because I was a little girl. So, you know, I wasn't given much slack on that either. And I went to school with farm kids, and they have a pretty pragmatic view of life. They always had to be home to do the chores.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
You know, it's kind of like Joseph Campbell, follow your bliss. It's going to work out. And make sure that, you know, you still have some skills that you can support yourself. Because if you're not independent financially, it's going to be rough. And there's no free lunch. So somehow you've got to figure out how to support yourself with a modicum of dignity, but give your full energy to what completes you. You know, Maslow talks about self-realization, and you have to realize what you have, what your skills are, and what you're best at, and what makes you feel complete. And for me, that the arts have always been that.
I want to thank Jennifer Carrasco for joining me today. Thanks, Jennifer. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.